Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. Studies have shown how detrimental social isolation can be and why social connections are an important part of our well-being. A research project at the University of New Mexico has demonstrated that for people facing severe social isolation, immigrant women, the power of connection can be transformative. The program, called Tertulias, offered a safe space for the women to share their experiences and draw on one another's knowledge. It was funded by a National Institutes of Health grant and created by Professor Janet Page Reeves, Vice Chair for Research at the UNM Medical School's Department of Family and Community Medicine, and Lydia Regino, Program Operations Director for the Office of Community Health. Originally, the groups were supposed to be in person, starting in April 2020, but the pandemic changed all that. Paige Reeves said they were worried going to Zoom would doom the project.
And at that time, a few people at UNM really used Zoom. We had just started, and nobody in the community really used it. There weren't doctor's appointments yet. There wasn't school yet. So we thought that the whole idea of doing this intervention by Zoom was going to be a fiasco. We didn't think anybody would want to come. We thought people would think it was weird, and we thought that it would not create the intimacy that we had hypothesized would be associated with the in-person groups. We had incredible recruitment success. I mean, we believe that it's the process that we used.
Talk about that, Lydia. How did you find the women?
I have a lot of experience working with community, working in different community organizations, and we work with community health workers. And so we all just were tasked to actually talk to community face to face. We did some recruitment, and so we had names. And so then we started calling people by phone, because I've been in the community for over 30 years. The first year wasn't that hard, to be honest. And the fact that most of the people that were at those meetings agreed, it was incredible. That was the first win-win for us. The fact that we were doing this through Zoom, talking all this jargon, and then having them accept. The other thing is, most of them wanted to be part of the weekly sessions. We were thinking, oh, they're going to definitely say, just give me a call every 2 months. That's what I want. And then it turned out that it was the best thing ever, because it was right when the pandemic started. Everyone was at home. Women were feeling really alone and really bombarded with having the family there 24/7 and needing a place where they could just talk about themselves and talk about how they felt. It was very interesting, because from day one in the groups that I led, we started asking them, how are you doing? How was your weekend? Do you want to share something? And we have some quotes where women say, you know, I actually wait for the Monday or the Thursday or the Tuesday when I meet with my group, with my friends. They started calling themselves my Zoom friends, my web friends, because it's the time when I get to share how I feel. There's nobody else who actually really cares enough to ask me how I feel. And that's actually throughout the 4 years that where we met with women, that was constant. They kept on saying, I really love when you ask me how I'm doing. I share my wins. I share my everyday life. I share if something's really bothering me, it's the time when I can open up. And I know that this is a safe space for me.
How long did they meet on the Zoom? Was it for a year or 2 years?
We had three cohorts for 4 years. So we met for almost a year.
The sessions themselves lasted around 10 months, maybe. Each cohort was a year long, but we had to have some data collection, and we had to have some final stuff at the end as well.
I understand the results after collecting the data, after doing this, were profound. What were some of the impacts?
Lydia, do you want to talk about the impacts?
It's incredible when women tell us, this is where I was when I started, and this is where I ended. I became the woman I once was. I healed my inner child. a lot of those things we didn't even expect for them to happen. From the get-go, we knew that we had to do something different with community research. We knew that when you involve community, they have needs, and you can't wait 4 years, 5 years later, after you write the report, after you do the findings, for them to, oh, okay, so this is what this was. Oh, this is what I gained. But they actually have needs that need to be met. And that's why we came up with this weekly sessions with them. We didn't know what to expect, especially being on Zoom. And so now I say that these meetings actually transcended Zoom. For them, they were actually folding clothes. They were taking care of their kids. They were at their places of work, cooking or doing the stuff that they do on an everyday in their jobs. They still had the opportunity to be engaged in whatever activity they usually engaged in and still be part of this and still have some gains, telling us, I want other women to experience what I experienced. And that's what I wanted to say, that the beginning, it was an effort just us doing it. The second year, it was the participants and us. Third year, and especially fourth year, it was them.
I just wanted to add just a couple of quotes we have. Somebody described it as, we have gray days, but in the group, we all empower each other, especially empowerment as women. We can change the color of the day. I'm starting to see my life this way, more positive, happier, and with more faith. It's very sweet. My life is changing into colors and light. I mean, like, to be doing something where somebody describes it that way, or somebody said, I'm healing things that I thought I could never heal. So that's how the impact has been. I've been able to share. And another person said, it's that little bag that we carry that's sometimes full of large losses, and letting go costs us. The best thing to do is to let go, leaving a stone in the road. And we have unconsciously healed things that we had not thought about or that we didn't want to externalize. And that's like describing the group. And then I did want to talk about the theoretical design of the project. Research projects have a theoretical framework. We called ours a theoretical architecture because we integrated three theoretical frameworks. One of them was cultural and contextual situatedness. The idea of the way that you do an intervention has to be integrated into the cultural and contextual kind of context. And then a gendered emplacement theory, which is, we know that place impacts health, but then feminist researchers have discussed how women experience place in a different way. And place includes social relationships, not just like physical space. It's the social space as well. And that women are often excluded from spaces that have historically been dominated by men. And so that women often create different types of protected spaces, and that that's potentially important for women. And then in the case of women immigrants, it's kind of like obvious, they're displaced from their actual physical country, from their past history with that place, all of the social relationships that went with it. And so they're in a new place. And the idea that getting somebody to be emplaced in a new place may require these other things. And then the third one is called Women's Funds of Knowledge, which is about the idea that people are usually lauded for their educational expertise and the letters after their name. But we know that people bring lived experience and wisdom, and that in particular, women bring types of wisdom and lived experience that are often completely devalued when thinking about what expertise is or what knowledge is or what wisdom is. So we explicitly valued those things. And in the context of doing all of that, we're analyzing the data from 4 years, and we have a theory about what the special sauce is in what we've been doing. And we're calling it a gestalt. And a gestalt, as you know, is like when the things that come together form something that's more than the sum of its simple parts. Because really, if I tell you we're doing a peer support group, it sounds, it's simple. It duh, like it's a bunch of women getting together and they talk. But it is, as you heard from the quotes, it's so powerful that something else is going on. So we've been trying to identify the factors. We're still in process of that. But we think one is that our group is a well-being group. It's not about an illness. You didn't have to be depressed or socially isolated to get into our group. We just knew that a lot of people are, and that that's an important thing for people. And we thought it would be beneficial. So there were people who weren't depressed, or there were people who weren't socially isolated in the group. It was a mixed group. It wasn't about a deficit of being ill. Plus, it was also a multi-age group. We didn't do it just like, oh, just women in their 20s or women in their 60s. And that actually had an incredible impact because the older women said, oh, by listening to the younger women, I now understand my daughter, my granddaughter, my own experience back then. And the younger women talked about how, oh, I totally understand now my mother, or I totally understand how I need to parent to my younger children. So it was this cross-generational sharing of wisdom and experience that was really powerful. And then the bi-directional and multi-dimensional nature of the social support, everybody was providing social support to each other, and that actually had a healing quality. So there's now research showing that if you come into a group and you think that you're helping me, that actually has a well-being healing impact for you.
This is University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm speaking today with Professor Janet Paige Reeves, Vice Chair for Research at the UNM Medical School Department of Family and Community Medicine, and Lydia Regino, Program Operations Director for the Office of Community Health. Together, they created their Tertulias program that began in 2020. The model of peer mentoring is being spun off into other areas, including potential plans for a Tertulia Center for Social Connectedness. Regino says the name came from her experience as a child in Mexico.
I get a phone call from Janet saying, Lydia, we need a name for the project. We need to submit the proposal now, and we need a name, and it's important. So then I just started blurting out phrases. And then I was like, wait a minute, how about Tertulias? And she said, what? What is that? And I said, you know, when I was a little girl, and I remember that the neighbors, the ladies used to get together and they used to tell each other hi and just say, oh, you know what? It's time. It's a tertulia time. And they would start talking to each other outside of their door or maybe going to their homes and start drinking coffee and start talking to each other about how their day was, just talking about their lives. And I said, why don't we use that? And she was like, I like that. And we went with it.
Now, some of the women had a lot of trauma in their past, and some of them were in existing violent relationships. How did they navigate that with the Tertulias?
It was hard. A lot of this was unexpected, expected but unexpected. We didn't know to the extent that they would share personal stuff. But I think it was year three. That was like, all every year we would talk about domestic violence. We would actually have some invited hosts come in, and invited guests come and talk about domestic violence, and then we would talk about the all the different we would bring all kinds of tools to present to them and bring awareness or just talk about what domestic violence is, especially during the pandemic and everybody being at home together. But year three was just like it. The first day, as we were meeting, one of the women starts saying, "Oh, he's here. He's here. Okay, I can't talk anymore. Now I'm going to start texting." So she started. So text started coming in, and then the other person started saying, "Oh, he just got here. Okay, if you see him yank the phone away from me, call the police." And we're like, whoa. So it was just live right there. And then we had had, I think the first or second year, we had another experience where one of the participants left the home and she said, I had to leave because he's yelling. And so I'm outside. I'm going to continue being here. Just know that this is happening and I am sorry. I kept it to myself for the longest time, but I can't do that anymore. And then another person said, I actually do my tertulias meetings in the car because I don't want him to hear me. So we started hearing all these different stories. And in fact, some of these women actually because of the interventions that we did, because of say, putting them in contact with different resources, with different therapy, with different lawyers, with organizations that support do this kind of work. Some women actually filed for divorce and got divorced, and others, and I'm not going to say 100% left their abuser, but they actually became more in tune and learned about what this meant, because a lot of them didn't really understand all the implications that domestic violence has.
Ernestina Mendez was one such woman who found the Tertulias group life-changing. The mother of four was in a violent relationship and ended up on the streets. Lydia Regino translates for her.
I only had $17 in my pocket, two changes of clothes, and what I was wearing. I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any family. I didn't have anyone. I was sent to a shelter. Through Enlace Comunitario, I was sent to the SANE program. I received behavioral health services. They gave me resources, but that wasn't enough for me. That didn't help me to lose the fear. And so I kept hidden in my home. What the father of my children wanted, he wanted to keep my kids. He wanted to take my kids away. His motive was keep my children to have new kidneys for his older kids. Yes, that sounds horrific. I couldn't even believe in myself. But he actually told me that came straight from his mouth, and I was in fear for a long time. Then I ended up with COVID.
Mendez says the COVID shutdowns actually helped her stay in hiding from her partner. Then the UNM Hope Clinic invited her to be part of the Tertulias program.
I really thank God for having found this Tertulias group. Well, in reality, they found me.
Conocí personas de toda la confianza. Hablamos mucho, reímos, lloramos. Me inspiraron la confianza.
I don't have any fear anymore. They actually inspired me that, and they gave me that trust that I needed. And so I stopped fearing. I stopped being in fear. They inspired me to begin to take some trainings, be out there. And so I became the Ernestina that I once was. I became myself again.
Mendez is now a community health worker, as is Leticia Munguia. She's from Guadalajara and first came to the U.S. on a one-way ticket to help a friend who was about to have a baby. But no one picked her up at the Los Angeles airport, and she was stranded. She eventually came to Albuquerque with the help of a Good Samaritan to work and got married. But the relationship turned violent. Munguia was invited to join Tertulias, but had no idea how to use the technology. Lydia translates for her.
They were very patient and showed me how to log in the first time I logged in. I was a person that didn't say anything. I would never share anything because I had so many mixed emotions in my heart, and I just would never share. After the sessions in Tertulias, I started to learn how this country actually functioned or worked. And then I began to understand that thanks to Tertulias, I was losing my fear and I was beginning to find opportunities that were there for me. But the most important thing is that thanks to Tertulias, I began to understand and to see that I was living in domestic violence.
Munguia is now divorced and is working with a lawyer to get permanent residency. She has also started her own business. Another Tertulias participant was Rosalba Ramirez.
For me, it was very important to connect with other women. Not just that they were Latinas, but that they were actually going through similar stuff or things than me. In being in connection with each other and to begin to listen to each other about our stories.
Y escuchándonos.
So listening to each other about our issues, our problems, but also our cultural richness. When everything was dark, then it turned gray, and then it began to be painted in brilliant colors.
Sí, porque empezamos a ver que teníamos
Yes, because
muchas
we began to see that we had a lot of strength, talents, empathy, knowledge, and we had a lot of, or we wanted to support each other.
These three women were among the authors of an article about the Tertulias program. Lydia Regino says over the course of the program, many of the women became new people.
They were like, my family doesn't understand, and they're concerned because now I take this day is mine, and these 2 hours are mine, and they cannot go and ask me for anything during those 2 hours because they're mine. And in fact, there were some women who actually took the whole day, and they went to their employer and said, I need this Monday as my day off. And they would start with pampering themselves, drinking that cup of coffee, that cup of tea, reading, doing stuff for themselves, not taking care of their grandkids or their kids. And so the family was just, what do you mean? You're now telling me no, you're not going to take care of my kids. Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. It's my time. And now I decide you can't just come and bring your kids to me and leave them there and then leave. I have this, I'm not going to say I'm against it or I'm not married to the word empowerment because I'm an interpreter and a translator. I do a lot of the translations and a lot of the things that happen in the project and other projects. And when it comes to translating the word empowerment in Spanish, it's like giving you power. And I'm like, well, I don't have power to give you. I can't give you power. But what I can do is actually help you to be in tune with your own power, to learn that you have power within and bring it out and learn about it and be in tune and do something with it. And so I think that that was part of what we did, that the women started learning that they have power within, sometimes being in a place where they felt so powerless, but they started learning that they have power within.
The Tertulias model is kind of like the most powerful thing that any of us have ever been involved with. It's incredible. And the participants feel the same way. And it was that whole thing about the 100% of people saying something. And we now are like, whoa, because after 4 years of doing this intervention, what the thing we've taken away is the power of peer support. And what we know also is that starting around 2019, the Surgeon General wrote a book about, I think it was about loneliness, and it started to become a thing. People started thinking about it. And then with the pandemic and social isolation, where people were told to socially isolate, and we started to more consciously understand the impact that social isolation has. And you can be socially isolated in the middle of a crowd. So we feel that our research is very timely. We've just gotten some funding from the state of New Mexico. So Tertulias is spinning off a bunch of potential things. So last February, we submitted a research grant to replicate something that the state was interested in replicating, which is a clinic-based model using a community health worker to address social drivers of health needs, things like food insecurity, social isolation, and postpartum depression, because it's a clinic-based intervention, specifically with well baby checkups. So for the first year, but it focuses on identifying and addressing postpartum depression and social needs that aren't being met, including legal needs, and then also a kind of a strengths-based parenting thing. But then we added the community-based peer support piece. So the clinic intervention is called DULCE, which is Spanish for sweet, but it's an acronym that I won't tell you what it means because it's a terrible acronym and I can't remember. But when we looked at the SWEET model, which is this clinic-based model, we immediately said, oh, it's missing peer support. So we named our innovative intervention Más Dulce, which means sweeter. And so we have this intervention that we are integrating clinic-based, the supports that I just described, together with peer support run out in the community. And we submitted an NIH grant, and that would be to work with two UNM clinics to do that Más Dulce intervention with Tertulias for postpartum people. But the state, our partners at the state through ECECD said, well, can we just go ahead and start it? Because we don't want to wait to see if NIH funds part of it. So we've started it at another clinic, the UNM Southeast Heights Clinic in the International District. And we'll be starting the groups in the community in January. We think it's going to be incredibly powerful. It's feels obvious to a lot of people that we talk to, women who have had children, thinking about the postpartum period and how important peer support is. And then we also have identified some challenges in the design of research related to the priority given to validated surveys over self-report from participants, which we consider to be an epistemological justice issue. When women tell us one thing in, you know, completely clear terms, but then maybe the survey that says on a scale of 1 to 5, how depressed are you, comes out and it's like, eh, no big deal. And so we have proposed a design of research to address that problem in the design of research. And we're trying to get that funded to do more research around, like, using this new design approach that we think we've come up with as a result of our experience. And then we're also submitting a follow-on to Tertulias, which we've been calling Tertulias Mas. And we want to understand that gestalt. We now know that peer support works, but we want to really understand how and why. And we also want to understand what we're seeing since the groups, because now we have groups that were from 5 years ago, you know, because the groups are now ended. So we have these longitudinal groups that are going on, but we still have contact with the groups. And we're seeing that people have had continuing impact. Some of them hadn't, some of them now need more, but there has been continuing impact. And there's also cascading impact onto their families or out into the community that we would like to better understand. And so that's a research project that we're asking for. And then on top of that, we are hoping to get some non-research funding, fingers crossed, to create the Tertulias Center for Social Connectedness, where we could do all sorts of things, including I have a separate research project in Hobbs and in Santa Rosa in Guadalupe County with older adults who have a small group in each community who have been working together with my colleagues at UNM who are heroes, which is one of the positions that Lydia holds. But they live in those communities and they work with our office. And we've been meeting since the beginning of the year with these groups in both communities to identify the things in their community. These are both rural communities, the things that make older adults socially isolated and lonely, and the things that make older adults in their community feel connected and feel not socially isolated. And we're coming up with the possible intervention around that. Somehow all of these things fit together, but we are passionate about the idea of social connectedness.
That was Professor Janet Page Reeves, Vice Chair for Research at the UNM Medical School Department of Family and Community Medicine, and Lydia Regino, Program Operations Director for the Office of Community Health, talking about the Tertulias program. You can find links to more information and publications about the research at kunm.org. That's also where you can find all our episodes. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwinner for our theme music. I'm Megan Kamrick, and thanks for listening to University Showcase.